Hello, I'm Marowat. That is Ometown up there. That right there is a follower goal. If you'd like to follow me, that would be great. I'm over here on twitch.tv/Ometown. Also, Ometown.com. Twitter has Ometown. Podcast, Ometown. Basically, Ometown is everywhere. It's your home. So come on over. Become a citizen of Ometown. Stay for the news. Come over and chat with me here on Twitch. I'm considering moving over to YouTube as well. But I haven't done a live stream over there. I guess I'll have to do a live stream separate. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. I'm not sure. I tried to get in earlier today. I got sidetracked with work. Being mayor is a 24-hour a day job, and so here we are. For the next, well, I won't say for how long, but I am going to end up doing the stream at 11 o'clock, like I've been doing. It's only that the reason why things got thrown all out of whack is because my plan was to stream at 11. And I ended at Eastern, and other people decided to pull the mayor in different directions, so I couldn't do it on a regular schedule. But now that's all done, and I can stream at 11 in perpetuity, as far as I'm concerned. So let's get into today's news. This is for June 4th. Pardon me, June 4th, 2022. Oh, gosh. I had an itch on my face, of all places. Okay, so this is the Ometown Daily News Show. It is for June 4th, 2022. It's episode 155. I've got a whole host of articles already selected and on deck ready to launch. The very first one is in the Continuity Report, and it says the five most anticipated movies of June 2022. Well, we're already 4 days into it. I'm really looking forward to the Worldwide Developers Conference. I want to see what new hardware. There's a lot of talk about AR and VR and maybe Apple glasses coming out. AR glasses. That would be spectacular. Let me tell you, I'm really excited. Sorry to get sidetracked, but considering it's already the fourth, I'm really jazzed. Okay. So this is the five most anticipated movies of June 22nd. Moviegoers are most looking forward to a return of Jurassic World, yeah, I suppose. But most, but this month's list includes some family fare, some horror, and even a small dramedy. It's over at Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not sure how it's going to play out when, yeah, I click this link. Rotten Tomatoes sometimes kind of, I don't know, gets messed up in my browser. But at any rate, here we are. It's an article by Rotten Tomatoes staff. It came out in the last 24 hours, like all of my news tends to be. And so they talk about Jurassic World Dominion, Lightyear, Elvis, The Black Phone, which I haven't seen yet. I think it all takes place, if I recall correctly. I've seen this in a while back. Basically, there's a kid that is in a single room, and there's a phone. Cha-Cha Real Smooth. I haven't seen the trailer for that yet. And that's the five. So I don't know. Jurassic World Dominion, maybe. Lightyear is family, and we'll probably trade on the Buzz Lightyear name, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. It's got a lot of big names in it, and I'm sure the animation is going to be phenomenal. So I'll probably end up watching both of those. Go over to Rotten Tomatoes. Follow the link that's in the chat in the show notes or wherever you're getting this. Follow the the notes, and you'll be able to see this article about the five most anticipated movies of June 2022. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Fed's Mester says inflation hasn't peaked and multiple half-point rate hikes are needed. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester said she doesn't see evidence that inflation has peaked and is on board with supporting multiple rate increases. Let's click the link. It'll take us over to CNBC. You always have these keynotes. Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester said Friday that, she doesn't see enough evidence that inflation has peaked and is on board with supporting multiple interest rate hikes. Mester also doesn't expect the central bank to pause after the summer, though she said that the magnitude of the moves could be reduced if inflation falls. And another, there's a quote in here that Mester said in a live interview on CNBC's The Exchange, quote, "I don't want to declare victory on inflation before I see really compelling evidence that our actions are beginning to do the work." Well, this article is over on CNBC.com by Jeff Cox. And to me, on the outside, looking in, obviously there's a lot of indicators that they have access to that I think the normal Joe does not, including myself. What I see are the effects of their decisions, of discussions, of actions of people that are already in a privileged position to make their own actions. Even prior to this, people are talking about this and they're making their own decisions based on that information. I know without a doubt that people are taking actions, not just on rumors, but on a limited number of facts that they have access to. I'll just put it to you that way. But we see costs continuing to go up, regardless. And I think it's because it's greedflation. It's profiteering off of the suffering of the last 2.5 years. And now that people, and there's been injections of capital, except that the injections of capital aren't at the right locations. The injections of capital are not in the middle class. They're not in the lower class. They are in people that already have the means to provide opportunity to others, except that they aren't offering opportunity to others. And it shouldn't even be poised as that. It shouldn't be presented as, oh, how gracious someone is that they are offering an opportunity to others. Because if you were to provide, if you were to wipe out student debt, student loan debt, if you were to, because it's been provided for mega corporations forever, but the middle class doesn't get bailed out. The lower class that took on a tremendous amount of student loan debt because they don't have the means to achieve academically without the burden of debt, right? They're not born with a silver spoon in their mouth. The middle class never is. But they're never bailed out. They're never bailed out. Yet, if you were to wipe out student loan debt, the middle class and the lower class, whatever that means nowadays, because there really isn't a middle class. There's the top 1% and then there's the 99. And there's a massive financial gap in between. There is no strata anymore, really. There was a chart that I had once seen. But at any rate, I'll try and find it. But the fact of the matter is the powerhouse, the engine, the mitochondria of the economic engine that is in the United States and everywhere, but in their particular context of their, you know, domestic economy in the United States, the middle class has always been the juggernaut of economics. We are the greatest consumers of things in mass, right? So we consume. And it provides the economic engine out to companies. They produce, they manufacture, and we buy. That's how it works. Federal government taxes everything. State government taxes everything. That's how they generate revenue. That's how they get money to power the public engine. I'll get more into this as we go on into other articles, but the fact of the matter is that that engine, that powerhouse, is not being stimulated in a way. It's just burdened by debt en masse, and now burdened by debt and increasing interest rates, all because historically a bunch of money has been thrown into a system that has benefited corporations and banks. It is self-fulfilling prophecy of generating revenue for people, but not the ones that actually power the economy. Now, my biggest concern here is that even within these interest rate hikes, even within this increase, this inflation, even with the CPI increasing by leaps and bounds, you're still getting corporations that get bailed out, that get stimulus money, that get subsidies, et cetera, from the government. You're still getting record profits, but the middle class isn't getting pay raises. They're not getting any greater benefits. They're not getting a superior work-life balance. They're being told they have to pee in bottles. They're being just blasted for unionizing because they don't have bargaining power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So interest rate is going to go up, basis rates are going to go up, and that means interest rates are going to go up even greater. When these basis points go up, everybody from the basic input all the way to retail, everybody wants to get a piece of the action, and it's very difficult to say, well, I'm only going to take 0.05%. No, it's easier to just say I'm going to raise my rates 10%, and every strata from pulling it out of the ground or, you know, cutting it off of a tree, whatever it is that is being gathered up by the primary resource generator, all the way up through processing out to the retail channel, all of them are going to be adding 5%, 10%, et cetera. And the prices are going to go up, and it'll continue, I think, all the way through to November, I'd say. They'll start cutting prices, but not really impacting overall profitability because it's going to be severely out of alignment with the trend. We're going to keep on increasing, at least in my opinion. And that's just looking at a bunch of information that may not turn out to be anything later on because there are additional controls that are being put in place. We'll see. We will see. But obviously the Fed is interested in still raising and slowing consumption. Yet the money is still out there. The money is still out there. It's not doing anything to slow down the spend, or I should say the acquisition of wealth. It's because the money is still out there. Let's continue on. This actually plays off of that, which is some people take personal loans. Now others use credit cards. To me, it doesn't really matter. One is leveraging a credit card and the other one is leveraging your reputation. And both of them are using your credit history to make a determination about how worthy you are of a loan. So if we click this link, it'll take us to Business Insider, and the article is written by Liz Newven and Ryan Wangman. I don't know what CEPF is, but this is an article called The Average Personal Loan Interest Rate by State Lender and Credit Score. And it says the average interest rate for a 24-month personal loan was 9.41 in February 2022. According to data from the Federal Reserve, the interest rate you get on your personal loan could look different depending on several factors. Primarily, it's your credit report, your credit worthiness, how much debt you are loaded by, the length of that debt retention, your earliest credit entry, credit history entry, credit account. And then it says before deciding on a personal loan, shop around with several lenders to find the best deal. Yeah, you can do that. Let's see if there's something interesting in here. Personal loans can sometimes have a lower interest rate than credit cards. Usually that's the case. The average credit card carried an APR of 16.17% in the first quarter of 2022. But the Fed Reserve says that it's 9.41 in February of 2022 for a personal loan. And really, it's a personal loan is an unsecured loan of whatever value that you are obtaining. It's usually at a certain value. It's used for something, either to consolidate debt or to make a purchase of some kind. That's kind of a lump sum, plop it on there, and you're done, and you have a known repayment rate. So it says average personal loan rate by year. They have a listing here on businessinsider.com where in 2017, the average personal loan interest rate for a 24-month personal loan was 10.13 in 2017 and 9.41 in 2022. Now, the difference between this and a credit card is that it's more difficult to get an unsecured personal loan than it is to get a credit card. Mainly because they are going to look at your credit history for a personal loan. They don't have any assets of any value. They're not even going to look at anything. You know, you're not leveraging anything of value when you make a personal loan. It's basically on your reputation. So you're going to want a really good credit score. If it drops below 700, expect to pay dramatically more. And if you get closer to 600, you can almost count on it being somewhere in the 20s, I'd say. And then it says here average personal loan interest rate by state. And I think Hawaii is going to be the highest, or no, lowest, sorry. I think Hawaii is going to be the lowest. Well, Guam apparently is right here, but and then depending on the state, it's kind of all over the place. Rhode Island is almost 12% for a personal loan. Virgin Islands is 14%. It's all about the amount of risk that a region is willing to take, and it's state by state. There's no real federal mandate one way or the other. In that particular instance, they're talking about a $5,000 personal loan for 3 years, not 2 years. So I'm going to scroll down a little bit more, and I think that's it, right? So loan rate by lender, they have something. Average personal loan rate by credit score. And I think, so yeah, 720 and above is 12.5%. That's probably the high end of a personal loan at the 700 or higher level. But the moment you drop below that, you're looking at it just going through the roof. And like I said, if you're getting into the 600s, you're looking at 20% plus, which is almost like loan shark level, you know? I mean, unless you're in a pinch, don't do that. And when I consult, I tell people don't go into debt to buy something, unless you know that you can pay it off, unless you know that it's not going to be a burden and you want to just kind of drip that payment out. In fact, depending on how you pay off something, it's actually beneficial to do something longer term because it shows that you have that dedication, commitment. Your first car that you purchase, if you do a loan and you pay it off, it actually shows that you have that reliability that you're familiar with the responsibility to pay that kind of stuff off. And it can turn out pretty good. Anyway, from there, that's the end of the article. But I encourage you, if you want to get more nuanced perspective from this, from Business Insider and these two authors, these two writers, go for it. Go over to businessinsider.com. Follow the link in the show notes, please. The next article is over in the Word in Tech channel here on Ometown, but it was aggregated from another source. Always keep that in mind. My news isn't from an internal anything. I don't use editors or anything. I like grab it from the source and then provide it here in a very small snippet, and I talk about it. In the word in tech, glasses or no glasses, this year's WWDC is all about AR. AR is augmented reality. It's a form of VR where, depending on what you use, it's superimposed in your field of view. And right now, for all we know, there are elements of augmented reality existing out there right now. Niantic is a company that does this. With various games, you can go out into the world and use your phone, and based on either devices or GPS, you can have something in virtual space, augmented reality, and you just walk around and you show your, you hold your phone up and you look around, and eventually you'll stumble across something. But it says here that Apple has been demoing AR for years, but has never really shown us how it's supposed to work. Apple's software is very good, generally speaking, even as the company has spread its focus among more platforms than ever, macOS, iOS, iPadOS, tvOS, and watchOS, and whatever software Apple's building for its maybe possibly coming someday car, and it's also almost certainly coming soon AR/VR headset, which I don't know why they made any. I've seen just about as much for the car as I have for the headset in terms of news. I'm not sure why one is more likely than the other. Right now, with ARKit, you can actually throw everything that somebody can imagine into augmented reality space in wherever you're living. It's pretty cool stuff, but I would really love glasses. As long as they are like this, maybe with a thicker, what do you call it? I don't know, the little earpiece, the arms on your eyeglasses. Wow, what is that even called? I've completely forgotten. Anyway, if it can be like this, then, I am in love, and I will spend copious amounts to get access to them, but please make it somewhat reasonably priced for the lenses. My God, they are, eyeglasses are so expensive, and it's because there's no competition. You know, don't tell me Warby Parker is knocking down enough price to be competitive. Prescription glasses are just so expensive. I have a pair of sunglasses that are prescription that are many hundred dollars, I'll just say that. Disconcerting for anybody that needs them and can't afford it. This article is over at The Verge by David Pierce. Apple needs to show us what a world looks like after smartphones, and I agree. And I don't want to hold up a device just to interact with augmented reality elements. I would love it for it to be able to detect my hand and be able to interact with the AR elements. Da-dun. You know, if it's within proximity of the AR element. Let's scroll down here for a minute. What all that success and maturity breeds, though, is a sense that Apple's software is finished, or at least very close, because they're talking about AR/VR software in the Apple ecosystem. Over the past couple of years, the company software announcements at WWDC have almost exclusively iterative and additive, with a few big swings. Last year's big iOS announcements, for instance, were some quality of life improvements to FaceTime and some new kinds of ID that work in Apple Wallet. Otherwise, Apple mostly just rolled out new settings, menus, new controls for notifications, focus mode settings, privacy tools, that sort of thing. Yeah, I agree. Now we need the next big thing, and I think augmented reality is it. So much so that I'm very excited for the WWDC event to take place. And let me see if there's anything else going on here. The last time Apple, the last time anyone, according to this article, had a truly new idea about how we use gadgets in 2007 when the iPhone launched. Since then, the industry has been on a path. improving the and tweaking without ever really breaking from the basics of multi-touch. But AR is going to break all of that. So I think that this author, David Pierce, is on the same page as I am, or I'm on the same page as many others that think that AR is really where it's at. VR is focused. It's very hyper niche. You can't, it's hyper local. You can't go anywhere with VR, but AR can be pervasive. It can be extraordinarily productive. It can throw you directions right on your glasses. You can interact with people even in AR space because if the programming is done right, then they can be superimposed in your field of view. They may not be able to see you, but they can see an avatar of you, symbolic in the same way that you can see them, or they can actually, you can actually see them because they can be sitting in front of a webcam, even with AR, and you can talk to each other that way instead of on a monitor. So it could reduce what I'm looking at right now. I actually got rid of two of my monitors because I felt like I was just being inundated with glass. But with Google Glasses or Apple glasses or Microsoft AR glasses, not HoloLens. HoloLens is really big and bulky. But what I want to do is be able to, within a certain region, throw up monitors that allow me to interact with data without having a display. And if I can spend the money on AR glasses that do the same thing, I can get rid of all of this and save tons of power, tons of desk space, increase my privacy just tremendously. I mean, it would be beautiful to just come in here and not have all this glass everywhere. Pardon me. So here's to WWDC dropping AR glasses next week. I think it's next week. Yeah. So the next article is in the Smack Talk channel. Apple's mixed reality headset may miss WWDC for 2023 launch. So Apple won't introduce its often rumored VR AR headset during WWDC, with battery issues reportedly forcing Apple to delay the hardware release into 2023. I put these two together because they basically showed up in my news feed at the same time. This is an AppleInsider.com article. Every article that I have seen from Apple Insider has these VR glasses, not AR glasses, as their image, post image. But Malcolm Owen is writing this article over at Apple Insider. And it says here, recent rumors have pushed the narrative that Apple will go big on AR and VR into WWDC 2022 to give developers a chance to make apps for the headset launch later in 2022. We're really deep into 2022 for this. If this was the case, then it would have been announced in 2021's WWDC so that it can launch in 2022. But I think that it will get announced in it will get announced in WWDC 2022 and launched in early Q1 of 2023. Giving ample time for people to develop apps and infrastructure and support for 2023. In fact, I would suspect that some people that know how to keep a secret are already in the loop for this. An article discussing Apple's tapping of Hollywood directors to develop content for the headset. Sources of the New York Times discuss the hiring of Mike Rockwell from Dolby Technologies to work on the headset. The two people familiar with the project said that issues have forced Apple to postpone a release until 2023. Yeah, sure, release, but it'll get announced, I think, next week. I hope. I have no insider information, so this is basically me. I'm reading the tea leaves, so to speak. The next article is in the Stock Marketeers channel, which is a show that I want to bring to Twitch about the stock market, business in particular. This is in the financial crime segment of MarketWatch.com. The FTC has accused financial education services of pocketing bogus fees from desperate victims over the past 3 years. So judge shuts credit repair service accused of being a $467 million pyramid scheme targeting people hurt by the pandemic. Let's click the link and that'll take us over to CNBC, right? No, Market Watch. Come on. Wow, that took a tremendous amount of time. I'm not sure what's going on. Where is it? Ugh, I don't know why the site does this. Every once in a while, it kind of throws me an oddball link. And because my aggregator grabs just a snippet, it should be linking directly to it. But let's see if I can find the actual article. Oh, one moment. There it is. So I'll correct the link in the article in the show note. And anyway, so this article was actually published initially May 31st, and it was updated within the last 24 hours. But it says a judge shuts credit repair service accused of being $467 million pyramid scheme targeting people hurt by the pandemic. And it says that the FTC has accused financial education services of pocketing bogus fees. And I agree. I think some companies will exploit any weakness in oversight, in policy, in procedure, anything really, to either make money. It's about scruples, really. The company and its owners are accused of raking in $213 million in bogus fees from customers in the past 3 years. The FTC filed its complaint in federal court in Detroit, where Judge Bernard Friedman issued a temporary restraining order last week, shutting the company down and freezing its assets. In his temporary restraining order, which was unsealed on Monday, Friedman said, there is good cause to believe financial education services generated a total of $467 million as a result of unlawful practices. These defendants collected millions in junk fees as part of a pyramid scheme that peddled phony credit repair products, and they are pleased that the court shut down the operation and froze its assets and will continue to pursue firms that prey on families' economic pain. Yeah. I won't get too far into this, but the firm had operated under a number of different names, including United Wealth Service, VR Tech LLC, CM Rent Incorporated, and Youth Financial Literacy Foundation, according to the FTC. Yeah, if the youth were being made literate by this, it's by pain and suffering based on this little snippet of writing. Customers who called the company's hotline would be told that to take advantage of the firm's services required an upfront fee of $99, followed by an additional $89 per month afterwards. Customers were told that they should expect to see their credit scores improve within 90 days. So they would basically get $300, $400 from a person within a quarter. But to reduce the fees and make money, callers were told that they could become agents for financial education service. Yeah, so it was basically an MLM. They could earn $1,000 a week and get the company's services at a discount. Yeah, all they had to do was go and find a few friends, right? Let's continue on. The next article is North Dakota's air farms are increasingly homes for drones. North Dakota's economy is off the rails, quote unquote, off the rails with a demand shift urgency for cleaner fuels, James Lehman, commissioner of the North Dakota Department of Commerce, said. We want people to know more than just the movie Fargo, the 1996 black comedy crime film that won 2 Academy Awards. Well, I don't know. Linking it to Fargo is probably not how you should do that. Let me see if I can find this article too. This is new to me. They haven't always done this link to that main page like this. But let's see if I can find something, find it real quick here. Sorry, folks. And you get to see this or hear this because I'm not going to edit it out. So this is a MarketWatch article by John Swartz. And one of the nation's least populous states, with about 775,000 people, is betting on the future of commercial drones, autonomous farming, and cybersecurity education. North Dakota is distinguished by its badlands and flatlands, but high above the sky, 60,000 feet to be exact, drones are being tested so that they can eventually deliver high-tech medical equipment and specialized drugs to remote outposts of the 19th largest state in land size. Yeah, but it's population density is extremely low. Which it would be great to change that, you know, more people go out there and do development. We won't talk about the weather, unless you're interested in cold weather for, you know, periods. I don't know what to say. It should be more developed, really. Like a lot of people, there's a lot of not in my backyard kind of a thing. So says North Dakota's economy is off the rails with demand shift urgency for cleaner fuels. And that's James Lehman again, as I said it earlier. North Dakota and its largest city are reshaping their legacy with $40 billion in announced projects and another $20 billion in the works. The state's gross domestic product was $55.7 billion last year. The wave of large deals are led by Cerelon Incorporated's plan to develop a major gas-to-liquids complex with an initial phase estimated at $2.8 billion and construction of $1.9 billion Atlas Power Data Center to be built by FX Solutions Incorporated. So they're pretty much on the industrial side, at least in this article. I don't know about their footprint for small business entrepreneurship from the middle class perspective, I'd say. When you're talking about billions, this isn't a lifestyle business. Okay, so let's see what else. They've got a lot of stuff in here. If you want to learn more about it, follow the link over to the article. Let's continue on. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Wedding party members spend $825 on average. Here's how to avoid a budget buster wedding season, says financial analyst. Americans are expected to attend 2.5 million weddings in 2022. Here's how financial and etiquette experts say guests can avoid overspending. I don't know. I would probably say learn to budget. This is an article at acorns.com by Ryan Ermey. And let's scroll down here. So it has this neat key points segment, like other websites. Americans are expected to attend 2.5 million weddings. I've already mentioned that. The most since 1984, which is a weird year just to throw in there, according to the Wedding Report. Wedding party members spend about $825 on average between travel, attire, events, accommodation, according to a recent survey from LendingTree. I don't really like the on average element of that because you can have. You can have a whole lot of really high priced spending. And then a whole bunch of low price spending, but the average doesn't really give you a proper perspective. I would probably choose median. 40 million Americans feel or have felt pressure to spend more than they're comfortable with to attend a celebratory or a celebratory event in 2022 per Bankrate. So they did their homework in this. This is pretty neat. Acorns is a recent addition to my aggregation, and it says communicate your concerns about money. Get creative with spending and saving. maximize your credit rewards. This is all stuff that you can use to kind of offset what you're going to spend. But you should never feel pressure to spend money, even if you're invited to a wedding. You shouldn't go into debt. You definitely shouldn't harm yourself just to attend a wedding. Your financial stability is more important than even attending a wedding, in my opinion. But I don't go to many weddings. Did when I was younger, but not so much anymore. Let's see here. I think if you want to learn more about this, if you want to read more about this, then go on over to the article. But I'm just gonna leave that out there for you. The next article is in the Continuity Report, which is a channel all about movies. This is the box office from Variety.com. Top Gun, Maverick smoking competition with stunning projected 33% drop. Tom Cruise is king of the domestic box office once again. Paramount's Top Gun Maverick is soaring to the top of the charts for its second weekend of release, drawing in a commanding $25 million on Friday from just over 4,700 locations after enjoying the widest domestic opening weekend with 4,732 North American cinemas. Let's click that article, and it's by J. Kim Murphy. I'm going to pause this video. And it's over at variety.com, so head on over there and read the rest of this article. But let's see here. After enjoying the widest domestic opening weekend with 4,732 North American cinemas, Maverick actually added 19 more for its sophomore outing. So the second semester, or the second, sorry, not semester, but the second weekend. The studio is projecting an $84.5 million haul through Sunday, a stunning 33% dive from its $124 million 3-day opening. A soft decline like that is a superlative achievement, marking the smallest drop in domestic box office history for a film that opened above $100 million. So, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness and Batman fell 67 and 50%, respectively, and further. Second weekend, pretty big money and percent drops. That's a lot. But it's good timing. People want to get out there. I'm actually running V Rising behind everything that I'm doing right now. So if you hear a bell ring, it's because V Rising is still running and the sun is coming up, or going down. Anyway, let's go on to the next article. Do-do-do. The New York Post article titled "Forgotten in Ubers, Phones, Breast Pumps, Dentures." Texas took top honors in Uber's 2022 Lost and Found Index, which found that three Lone Star cities have the most forgetful passengers, who are leaving behind everything from their phones and vaping paraphernalia to dentures and even breast pumps. So let's click this link. It comes out of Stock Marketeers because it was sourced from MarketWatch, and now I've got to hunt it down again. They've really changed how I'm getting the news. So, doink. I'll have to review this and see what's going on. One passenger reported a metal leg as missing, but didn't specify whose leg it was. Because sometimes you need to get a leg up on people. Be sure to follow, otherwise you'll miss jokes like that. Austin, the state capital and home of the University of Texas, had the most absent-minded professors, absent-minded passengers for the a second straight year, with Houston coming in at number three and Dallas at number five, according to the sixth annual index by the rideshare company. I really think that this could probably be something that could be talked about. Like each month, just talk about the stuff that's missing, and maybe you can find you can find the owners of these things. There were also some bizarre items, writers reportedly, that They left in the calves between May 2021 and April 2022. They include grandma's teeth, a fingernail. Ew. Ew. Supreme underwear. I'm not sure what that is. And 40 chicken nuggets and a breast pump and a white cowboy hat that were left together. It's like Homelander from The Boys. That's on Prime, by the way. I just binge watched the three episodes, and along with Stranger Things season four, I'm so hungry for kind of this darker stuff that is both humorous and just the opposite of Marvel. There's it's so much more grim in The Boys. Anyway, if you want to read more about this, it's over at MarketWatch. I think it'll be an interesting. There's a little bit more. It says that the article was first published on NewYorkPost.com or NYPost.com. In the 2021 survey, there were more incidents of lost Lysol wipes, hand sanitizer, and COVID rapid tests and vaccination cards. I can imagine that. I mean, we're 2 years into a pandemic. Let's continue on to the next article. This is in the Smack Talk channel simply because it has to do with AirTags and Apple, and it was probably sourced from Apple Insider or some other of my Apple-related news aggregation sites or sources. A woman has been charged with murder for repeatedly running over a man in Indianapolis over claims of infidelity, apparently discovered by tracking his car using AirTag. So let's click this link. This is indeed an Apple Insider article by Malcolm Owen. And let's see, Andre Smith was hit multiple times by a car outside Tilly's Pub in Indianapolis on Friday, with emergency services discovering him under the vehicle. The 26-year-old was pronounced dead by medics on the scene and a coroner's office determining the car was the cause of death. Either that or rapid changes in gravity. Let's see. The witness said that they were told by the driver, Galen Morris, that Smith was tracked using an AirTag and GPS, reports IndyStar. Morris claimed she was the girlfriend of Smith and believed that he was cheating on her. You know what? Little bit of wisdom from somebody that's older. If somebody is cheating on you, just leave. Just leave. You will find another person, someone that deserves you, and you won't be charged with murder, vehicular homicide. Morris has been preliminary charged with murder, with final charges yet to be determined. Coping skills, folks. We need to teach how to cope with stress, and it's different per person and unique to their particular flavor of upbringing and psychology and what they have had to deal with in their life. And we just do a shockingly weak effort to offer mental health. As a society, I won't even call out regions because I can't speak to everybody. But around me, I definitely think that there is an issue with mental health. We just don't teach how to cope with stress and how to alleviate that stress without doing something like this. A lot of it is about opportunity and equity and whatnot. But let's move on. The next article is over in Four Wheel Tech, the Super 73R series e-bike. I keep wanting an electric motorcycle, but batteries just aren't where they are for me. I can't keep a UPS from having to replace its batteries. I don't know. It's like water and ants and batteries are the insidious things that are on my radar. Maybe I just overshared. Anyway, The Super 73 R Series e-bike is expensive, heavy, and extremely fun. This article over at Ars Technica says, without a doubt, the Super 73 R Series Brooklyn is the worst bicycle that they've ever ridden. It's too small for many adults. It forces you into an awful riding position. It's unconscionably heavy, and it offers a grand total of one gear. Riding it was also far and away the most fun that they've had on an electric bike yet. So let's click the link. And it takes us over to ArsTechnica.com by John Timmer is the article. It says, is it a motorcycle, a dirt bike, an e-bike, whatever category you choose, it's fun. Well, to me, it looks like a cafe racer bike, a motorcycle. So that style of bike, I think, is great. I don't know about it putting you in a awful riding position, but cafe racers look exactly like that. Let's see, the design urban dirt question mark. I don't know, it looks pretty nice. It's got fat tires like beach ride, like a beach bike, you know, that with those really fat tires that won't sink into the ground too much. But it definitely looks like a cafe racer style bike. The same frame and everything. I mean, it looks like you would just slap a conventional combustion engine in there and off you go, but it's electric and it's a regular bike, so you can pedal. Super 73 offers 5 different versions of its R series, an e-bike that offers either full electric drive, full pedaling, or electric assisted pedaling. All 5 versions, however, look like miniature versions of a dirt bike. One, the Malibu, is kitted out to look like an off-road racer. I tested the Brooklyn. That author did, not me. They tested the Brooklyn edition, touted it as a performance street racer. The key difference here seems to be the tires, which are relatively slick, but still offered plenty of grip and handled the gravel trail with confidence. I don't know. That's not slick. I dig them. I don't know. I like the bike. So let's see if they actually state what the price is. Who's it for, they say. Okay, well, who's it for? It's for those that have $3,500, $4,000. Yeah, it's expensive. 25-mile speed limit. Okay. I don't know. If you like that cafe racer style motorcycle, but you don't want to have to get a motorcycle license, this is probably what you want to get. Just to ride around. I mean, it's not something that you can go long distance off-roading with, I'm sure. Let's go on to the next article. That next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. And the author of this article visited Home Depot and Lowe's to compare the home improvement chains, and they saw why do-it-yourselfers and professionals have different preferences. So the author visited Home Depot and Lowe's to see how the home improvement giants stack up, and we really only have 2 in the United States, and that's Home Depot and Lowe's. Home Depot continues to have higher sales. Home Depot and Lowe's are home improvement competitors who've both benefited from the boom in renovations over the past few years, and they visited both. So let's click the link and take us over to Business Insider. It looks like it's a quite expansive article, but it's probably going to be the same that I usually see from Business Insider, which is about 50% pictures. Mary Meisenzahl is the author of this article, and let's just kind of scroll through this. Home Depot just reported a successful quarter with $38 billion in sales, blowing away analyst expectations. Let's see, curbside pickup, that's what they talk about in Home Depot. Depending on the location, they have curbside pickup, even Lowe's does, but not everybody. Let's see. Yeah, they both have nurseries. They both have plants that are ready to be picked up. Let's see if I can find something a little more interesting than this. They definitely focused on the plant side of things, the garden center and the nursery. But then they walk into the store itself, and dozens of aisles stacked to the ceiling with home improvement supplies. If you've never gone into a Home Depot or Lowe's, count yourself lucky. From my anecdotal experiences, Home Depot is very much more geared towards, I guess you could say, the contractor side of things, although both have contractor offerings. But the do-it-yourselfer, the home improvement person that is more on the lighter side, where you're not doing decks and you're not, I don't know, the more industrial, the more builder-oriented, the more home improvement company or individual, as a service, you'll end up going over to Home Depot for some reason. The help, though, previously it was, to me, again, it's anecdotal. To me, the difference had been more apparent, roughly 10 years ago. But nowadays, there are fewer employees walking around and helping people at Home Depot, and there are more over at Lowe's that are the same as what was over at Home Depot. And so you have the same people, and the same culture is oozing across from Home Depot into Lowe's, as everybody is either downsizing or, optimizing who is doing what. So it says the same goes for flooring, which had multiple aisles dedicated to different types. This is the same in Home Depot and Lowe's. So I'm curious what they do. I'm gonna scroll down real quick here. They make a shift over to Lowe's at some point. They said that they're surprised to find clothing and accessories for sale, mostly from John Deere. Lighting sections are pretty much the same. There's always cabinets and pretty much all the same stuff. It's in slightly different providers. So some providers are the same. Like, I just found out that Lowe's bought Jacuzzi, and so the faucets that used to be Jacuzzi are now Lowe's, but they're not named by Lowe's. They're called something else, but it's a Lowe's brand. So like, I was buying Jacuzzi faucets and replacing the builder grade faucets that I had, and now they switched from Jacuzzi to something else, and I can't remember the name of the brand. It might still be Jacuzzi, but I was told that Lowe's bought Jacuzzi. All kinds of stuff. But it Lowe's, to me, comes across as more consumer friendly, or prosumer, versus the more contractor, construction side, industrial of Home Depot. But that might not be the case everywhere. And I think a lot of this, what this article is talking about, is more anecdotal. So take it all with a grain of salt. But I appreciate the effort that went into this. I'm going to scroll all the way up. It's quite a long article. If you want to see a bunch of pictures and some perspective from Mary Meisenzahl, go over to the Business Insider article. Again, linked in the show notes. I've got three more articles. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. It says Elon Musk says executive competence is super underrated in politics and backs open primaries. Here it says the Tesla and SpaceX CEO tweeted that his political leanings are moderate. Musk said executive competence deserves more attention in as it is super underrated in politics. Yes, super underrated is the professional term that politicians use to announce their competence. He backs open primaries as a way to move candidates to be more centrist. The Tesla and SpaceX CEO on Twitter that executive competence is super underrated, and that he's backing open primaries. So let's click the link. It'll take us over to businessinsider.com, and Sam Tabaridi is the author. Here's the thing about politics and business. Government should never be run like a business. It's great for private public participation, partnership, sharing of knowledge, applying for grants from the government, offering up opportunities by applying for bids in contracts and whatever else. And this kind of dragged me down real quick, because my point is government should never operate as a business. It should take the best of business, but it shouldn't operate as a business. Why? Because government is lossy. It's built to spend money for the greatest good, doesn't generate revenue. It is there to support the citizens that pay into either the local, state, federal government. And it should never, ever fail. It shouldn't take so much risk that it collapses. It shouldn't make decisions in a vacuum either. So it has to be in partnership with private enterprise, but it shouldn't operate as private enterprise, because government cannot afford to collapse. If it does, it never recovers. It doesn't recover because everybody lacks confidence in the enterprise from that point on. The reason why businesses can fail is that it's largely anonymous. If Tesla were to fail, nobody, people would probably assume that there's greater risk with Elon Musk, but with so much money and so many other things, he'd be fine. But the people that are in the enterprise are completely screwed. They'd have to go somewhere else, find something else. And they are the ones that are. So imagine if government were to collapse. Imagine that. So I get really bent out of shape when the government even shuts down, because the government should never shut down. It should be striving towards an acceptable ratio in its spending, so that even though it is spending in a negative, the GDP and taxes have the ability to recover. But there's a lot of people that are making public risk and private benefit. And that's the problem with running government as if it is a business. It's a mistake to do that. Entirely a mistake to do that. So I don't care about executive competence. There are a lot of people that are extremely competent out there that aren't part of a Fortune 100 company, because there's a lot of who you know, not what you know, in business. And really, it shouldn't come down to who you know in government, even though in politics, there is a tremendous amount of who you know. And I know of people that have gotten jobs because of who they know in government. And it just shouldn't be that way. Now, I hear the voices saying, oh, Mayor Watt, you're very naive. How can you be running Ohmtown? Well, look around. I mean, there's not a lot of people here in my chat, so I guess I'm not running it really well. Oh, my goodness. What happened to this? See, I don't grab... I don't edit the posts, so this is just kludgy, and I'll have to fix it. But let's just go to the source. This is over at The Hill. I think they do something with their articles that make things kind of wonky, but let me pause this. This is an article over at The Hill, and I'll throw this into the show notes. And you can click visit the source. I'll have to edit this article But anyway, the article's over at The Hill, and it's the CDC says 20 monkeypox cases detected in 11 states and viral strain identified. It's an article written by Joseph Choi. And there's only 20 monkeypox cases. I talked about it briefly yesterday. It's very focused in who has apparently been getting it. So it's all about risk. Don't take extraordinary risks. Get to know who it is you're fooling around with, folks. The strain of the monkeypox virus affecting patients in this outbreak is the West African clade, I guess. And that is less severe than other known clades, the Congo Basin clade, meaning that in historical outbreaks in Africa, it has led to fewer deaths, says Jennifer McQuiston, deputy director for the CDC's Division of High Consequence Pathogens and Pathology. Wow, that is a big name to live up to. So most monkeypox cases in the U.S. have been found among men who have sex with men, but the CDC confirmed that one case had been found in a woman who traveled to West Africa and reported having a heterosexual sex life. Nobody's really immune, folks. It's all about knowing what's going on, how this happened, and how it jumps from one species to another, and how humans now have this. I don't know. So it says CDC provided a rough timeline of the monkeypox outbreak in the U.S., sharing that the first two cases were detected in men, one in Massachusetts, one in New York, who had traveled internationally. So I'd be curious about how they were exposed and how this happened. Maybe I'll do some digging around and see. But let's go on to the next article. And the last one for today. It is majority of U.S. teens prefer in-person learning from a survey from Pew Research. But there are some serious caveats here. The story at a glance segment that they offer is a survey finds 65% of students would choose to learn exclusively in person when the pandemic ends. Around 8% said that they attended hybrid classes, and another 11% said that their courses were completely virtual, yet only slightly more than half of Black teenagers surveyed indicated a shift back to in-person learning at the end of the pandemic, while 70% of white teens said the same. This is an article over at thehill.com by Adam Barnes, and it too was posted within the last 24 hours. Says that 80% of teens between the ages of 13 and 17 attended classes entirely in person in the last month. And these are teens. Found that 80% of teens between the ages of 13 and 17 attended classes entirely in person in the last month. Around 8% said that they attended hybrid classes, and another 11% said that their courses were completely virtual. In the views of how students prefer to learn, 65% would choose exclusively in-person instruction, which is slightly different than what that article said at the beginning of this. It said found that 80% of teens between the ages of 13 attended classes. And then I think, where was it? 80% of teens, right? That's what they keep on saying, but this is compared to 18% who favor hybrid model and 9% who would rather learn online. This is really about the ability of the educator to formulate a plan that gets the learning done in an online vehicle versus the social aspects that teens are really embracing. That they want to go and hang out. They want to see their friends. They would prefer not having to go to class at all. The survey also asked students to assess their school's handling of both online and hybrid learning structures. About a third of the students said that they were not at all satisfied with their school's efforts, but the remainder felt the school handled the disruption very well or somewhat well. But it's not about the disruption, it's about the vehicle in which they are learning. So if everything was well planned, well organized, and the ability for the student to just learn the material and be interactive and be able to apply it and walk away going, yes, I learned something each day, that would probably kind of, well, it would change the narrative quite a bit. It says there is a worry among students and parents that the pandemic negatively affected educational achievement. Only half of the parents surveyed said they were not worried their child's academic outcomes were disrupted. So it's basically 50-50. But for teens, they need that social interaction. Otherwise, you kind of separate, you become distant, and you feel that you're losing your friends because you're not able to hang out for hours in each classroom. I mean, you get to hang out all day with your friends, as opposed to the people that are local to your residence, wherever you might be. And not everybody has a lot of people that they can hang out with, depending on where you're living. So I think that it's interesting. But we have a perception that in person is superior, and the data really doesn't pan out that way, based on what I've done research looking at data. If you have a well-designed course and the students are embraced online so that they are engaged and there is relevance and they make a connection, online learning is just as effective or superior because they can do it at their own pace, on their own time, even if it is guided in stages or regularly. They just have to be kept on task and taught, versus the kind of a haphazard, rapid transition to online, and none of this was ever taken into account when courses were designed. Now, after 2 years, I think that this research shouldn't be looking at the past anymore. We have plenty of data that shows that the transition was haphazard, but now that we are very well capable of designing courses for online, I think it's possible that teens can still learn that social aspect, just like going to a four-year college. I mean, most of what you get out of going to a four-year college is the social interaction along with the education. There's so many things where the carrot and the stick are one and the same, and you're happy to get hit by the stick just so that you can take a bite of the carrot, you know. That's basically college. And you get a lot of education, but most of the people that go to college go, I don't need any of this stuff or that stuff. But it's mandated that to get a degree, you have to take all of the other stuff you're not interested in. That's high school. That's teens. So I think we still have some evolutionary steps, maybe revolutionary steps in culture to accept online education. But it's always been the case for the last 30 years. Online has been a problem as an element of perception, not really efficacy. I think we're very capable of learning online remotely. And that's the end of today's Hometown Daily News show. At the beginning and end of all of the shows, I always click that little logo, and then the page refreshes, and you can see that we have a whole new set of articles that can keep you busy throughout the day. And Hometown is aggregating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then we talk about it each day. I'm going to be doing this tomorrow at 11 o'clock, not 2 o'clock tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much for coming. This has been Mayor Watt over at Hometown. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.